امروز یه عده‌ای در بخش‌های مختلف دنیای اسلام به نام گروه‌های تکفیری و وهابی و سلفی و علیه ایران، علیه شیعه، علیه تشیع دارن تلاش می‌کنن، کارهای بدی می‌کنن، کارهای زشتی می‌کنن، اما اینا دشمنای اصلی نیستن. اینا همه بدانن دشمنی می‌کنند، حماقت می‌کنند، اما دشمن اصلی اون کسی است که اینها رو تحریک می‌کند، اون کسی است که پول در اختیارشون می‌گذارد، اون کسی است که وقتی انگیزه اونها اندکی ضعیف شد به وسایل گوناگون اونها رو انگیزه دار می‌کند. اون کسی است دشمن اصلی که تخم شکاف و اختلاف رو بین اون گروه نادان و جاهل و ملت مظلوم ایران می افشاند. اینها اون دست پنهان سرویس های امنیتی و اطلاعاتی است. لذا ما مکرر گفتیم این گروه های بی عقلی که به نام سلفیگری، به نام تکفیر، به نام اسلام با نظام جمهوری اسلامی مقابله میکنن، ما به اینا گفتیم ما شما رو دشمن اصلی نمیدونیم، ما شما رو فریب خورده میدونیم.
Tunisia, December 18th, 2011. A young man burned himself to ignite a series of widespread protests against innumerable injustices in his society. The protesters wanted their West-inclined government to rule according to justice and Islamic law. In less than a month, the political upheavals in Tunisia spilled over into other countries like Libya and Egypt. People took to the streets to rock the dictatorship of Hosni Mubarak and Muammar Gaddafi. Soon after, Bahrain and Yemen joined this revolutionary movement. Al-Tahrir Square in Sana'a and Pearl Square in Manama became scenes of passionate protests in these two Arab countries. Given the Islamic nature of these revolutions, people mainly call for the enforcement of Islamic law and the establishment of justice in their societies. As this Islamic movement began to spread in the regional countries, Western media began a campaign to divert public attention from these popular revolutions that had coincided with the economic crisis in the US and Europe. Since the movement had begun in Arab countries, they described it the Arab Spring instead of the Islamic Awakening.
Coming apart at the seams, it sure looks like it 2 years into the Arab Spring. Arab Spring. The winds of hope and change have turned into a tempest of fear, and people are crying foul. From Tunisia, where the recent assassination of an opposition leader has plunged the country into its worst turmoil.
Do you think that the conflict associated with the Arab Spring will eventually result in there being a democratic government in the said countries?
Although the revolutions had started in different countries, they had a lot in common with each other. For example, in all these revolutions, the protesters chanted slogans against the US and Israel and prayed together in the capital's main squares. The emergence of the Islamic Awakening and numerous revolutions, one after another, had put the interests of some supremacist countries in grave danger. With the victory of these revolutions, the US could no longer take full advantage of the strategic locations in the Middle East, and European countries could no longer control Islamic movements on their own soils. This imminent threat galvanized the powers into action to find solutions so as to harness Islamism and prevent other Arab regimes from falling. Here, a scenario was created to derail the Islamic Awakening, and here Syria became the main target. The West was looking for a way to overthrow the Syrian president and change the country's political structure according to its own interests. Syria was part of the axis of resistance, and delivering any major blow to this country could have serious repercussions for Lebanon's Hezbollah, the Palestinian resistance, and Iran. Though the Syrian democratic structure needed revamping and some constitutional amendments seemed necessary, the situation was much better in this country compared to the Arab kingdoms. To mislead the public opinion in Syria and to incite the people to stand up against the government, in the early days of the protests, which had started in the city of Daraa, some protesters were killed in armed attacks attributed to the government. Though some measures taken by the Al-Assad administration to control the public protests were not proper enough, leaked information showed that a number of armed terrorist groups had already infiltrated the public protests to turn them into a gory scene of war and bloodshed. As the revolutions were making their way through public demonstrations in other countries, news from Syria indicated the bloody wave sweeping across the country. Rumors began to go around that the army forces were separating from the Syrian government. These separatists later became known as the so-called Free Syrian Army. The Syrian people, who were not for destruction and bloodshed, didn't welcome armed conflicts, and therefore Takfiri groups from neighboring countries like Jordan, Lebanon, Turkey, and Arab countries entered Syria to wreak havoc with this country. As the crisis intensified in Syria, a new plot began to hatch in Arab countries. In an unprecedented move, Takfiri and Wahhabi scholars in Saudi Arabia issued a so-called jihad fatwa against the Syrian government.
به سمت شما گسیل خواهیم داشت و شما را خواهیم خورد. بله، شما را خواهیم خورد.
With the widespread financial support from Saudi Arabia and other Arab countries in the region, Takfirism, as an extremist movement, has grown up in some Wahhabi religious schools in countries like Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, and India. These schools have been the breeding grounds for people who deem that Islam is a religion of violence and extremism. This school of thinking claims to favor a type of Islam practiced by Prophet Muhammad and his companions at the dawn of this divine religion. These self-proclaimed champions of pure Islam long for establishing a government like the one established by the Umayyad rulers. That's why they insist on using the word the Levant instead of Syria to include in their hypothetical territory. In addition to Syria, countries like Jordan, Lebanon occupied Palestine, as well as parts of Iraq and the Sinai Peninsula. Takfiris believe that except for Wahhabis, the followers of all other Islamic schools of thought have to join them. Otherwise, they will be excommunicated, and as infidels, they will have to die. The fact is that this way of thinking has nothing to do with Islam and its ideals. The Takfiri's interpretation of Islam is fallacious and untrue. Under such circumstances, terrorist militants from all over the world have swarmed into Syria, armed and funded by Arab countries and the West, to pursue goals far beyond overthrowing Bashar al-Assad. Those brainwashed in Takfiri schools for years, this time appeared on stage under the banner of Islamic Jihad, pretending to revive pure Islam with all their heart and soul. But what did they do except for butchering innocent people, helpless Syrian women and children, in the name of Islam? All of a sudden, the world that had been preoccupied with the Islamic awakening in the region was struck with the horror of the crimes committed in Syria. Soon, a large part of Syria lay in ruins after being occupied by terrorist groups. Groups like Daesh, the Al-Nusra Front, Ahrar al-Sham, and a number of other terrorist groups that committed many crimes in Syria on a daily basis. As the figures show, over the past 4 years, more than 200,000 people in Syria have lost their lives, and millions of them have been displaced. The inhumane phenomenon of Takfirism had to gain more power and recruit more soldiers to fulfill bigger goals. The first step was to kill Shia and Sunni Muslims on a large scale in order to undermine the growing power of Islam, which was in fact the terrorist group's raison d'etre, was to spread insecurity in other regional countries so as to take over the new Middle East that the US had drawn the map of years ago. The purpose was to divert public opinion from the Israeli occupation of Palestine to domestic issues of the regional countries, and also to provide enough excuses for hegemonic powers to send their armies to the region. Instead of fighting the common enemy of the Islamic world, these seemingly Islamic groups have taken aim at Muslims, ravaging their homes and property and violating their wives as the best spoils of their victory. Now the mainstream media are dealing with the sectarian conflicts between Shia and Sunni Muslims, an issue that made a set off for Sunni-populated provinces at the east and west borders of Iran to ask them about the relationship between Takfiri groups like Daesh and Islam.
برادر کشی و نست کشی در اسلام ممنون. اسلام دین محبت رافت. اسلام برای خشونت نمیده. خشونت رو محکوم کرد اسلام.
اونا کلن از اهل سنت دوره. منطقه به نام اهل سنت خودشون اجازه ده. منطقه اهل سنت نیستم اونا. اهل سنت کسی که مسلمان باشه نماز بخونه این زمان دست به برادر کشی نمیده. این زمان مطمئن باشه که اهل سنت این کار نمی کنه.
شک داریم به این حرکات هایی که اخیرا شده توی سوریه، توی عراق، توی کشورهای دیگه ما میبینیم، ما شک داریم. اینا جنگ اسلام و کفر نیستن، اینا دست نشانده کفرن و توطئه کفرن که میخوان اعمال کنن و به این نتیجه برسن و پیروز بشن.
اسلام رو به تمسخر میگیرن. ما گوش به حرفا نباید بدیم. ما باید تا بندگی خدا رو به جا بیاریم.
آل تسنن و نه آل تشیع. هیچ انسانی واقعا وجدانش قبول میکنه انسان کشی، مسلمان کشی، برادر کشی، هیچ کسی نه قبول نداره.
القاعده و درست شده و القاعده شده اسلامی. اسلامی نیستن ولی کافرن. اگر کافر نیست 400 تاجن زن سر ببری، زن و بچه. این مسلمان هم مسلمان نیست، اصلا میسن سگم نیست، از خوک کسیبتره.
Takfiris, with their symbolic black flag and Islamic slogans, put emphasis on the enforcement of Islamic law. But what is Sunni scholars' take on this issue? Does Daesh's behavior have any place in Islam?
اینها تعلیم پیامبر نیست. پیامبر نفرموده که شما بروید و هجوم بکنید و هر کسی دلتون خواست سرش را ببرید و بکشید و رعب و وحشت در مردم بیگناه، خصوصا زنها، بچه‌ها، کودکان، پیر مردان، پیر زنان، اون کارهایی که دشمن سرسخت اسلام که یهود است داره در فلسطین و در جای دیگر انجام میدهد، اینها نامشون مسلمان هستن ولی چنین کارهایی را انجام میدهند. از نظر ما این کارها محکوم هستند.
در جنگ جهانی اول و دوم امریکا، اروپا بیشتر ممالک اسلامی را گرفتن، اما اراضی و جسم مردم ما را گرفتن. زمانی که اونا رفتن، با رفتن خودشان فکرشان هم رفت.
به قول مقام معظم رهبری حفظه الله، این آمریکا و اروپا الان بیداری اسلامی را لمس می کنند که اونا داره به طرف اسلام می آیند. اینا اسلام را بد جلوه می دهند و در کجا کار میکنن؟ در کشورهای اسلامی، مانند سوریه، مانند افغانستان، مانند پاکستان، مانند عراق، این کارها را انجام میدن. هدف نهاییشون این است که مسلمانان را درگیر خودشون بکنن و خودشون تماشا بکنن. دیگه هیچ هدفی بیشتر از این ندارن.
اما این بار که برگشتن، کوشیدن فکر مسلمین را عوض کنند و به جان هم اونها را به جان هم بیاندازند، تفرقه ایجاد کنند در بین اهل سنت، گروه های مانند وهابی، مانند سلفی، مانند تکفیری، مانند جهادی، اینا را درست کرد، خودشان نسبت به هم اختلاف ایجاد کردن، نسبت به اهل شیعه تندروی کردن. به نظر من هیچ کدام اینا به صلاح اسلام و مسلمین نیست.
ما به عنوان عالم شافعی مذهب که این کتاب های حضرت امام شافعی، کتاب های امام نووی، کتاب های حضرت امام محمد غزالی، احادیث حضرت رسول الله، صحیح بخاری، صحیح مسلم که از کتاب های ماست، هیچ کدام به ما اجازه نداده است که خون مسلمانی، ناموس مسلمانی، خدای نکرده به آن تجاوز شد.
With the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan in December 1979, The Islamic groups in this country stood up to defend their land against the Soviet invaders. 10 years after the onset of the war, the country was never occupied completely by the Soviets, and the invasion turned to be a war of attrition for the USSR's army. On the other hand, with the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, the US found its interests in danger, so it began to arm different groups in this country. As the Soviet army was forced to retreat, a conflict erupted between different groups as they tried to establish a new government. They were separated into different groups, spreading insecurity and destroying resources in the country. Among the dissident groups, later the Taliban came to the foreground. With the help of Pakistan's intelligence services, the group managed to take a considerable part of Afghanistan under its own control in a short period of time. The emergence of the Taliban in Afghanistan provided an opportunity for Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda to use this country as their stronghold to organize and train their own forces. Al-Qaeda consisted of Arab and non-Arab forces that have come to Afghanistan from different countries during the Soviet invasion and used to enjoy the backing of the West and Arab states. With the emergence of the Taliban, they came back to Afghanistan. This time, their stated aim was to wage a phony war against the US and the West throughout the world. The US's cold bombing in the Yemeni port of Aden, bombing US embassies in Kenya, Tanzania, and finally the September 11th attacks, prepared public opinion for the US war on Al-Qaeda, Afghanistan, and later Iraq, sold to the world as a war on terror. The war the US waged under the name of bringing democracy to Afghanistan and Iraq was in fact to control rich oil and mineral resources in those two countries. But 15 years on, not only has the US invasion not uprooted Al-Qaeda, it has helped terrorism spread throughout the whole region. After Al-Qaeda passed its expiry date, brand new Daesh came out of the crises in the region to become a household name and act in line with US interests in the region. In March 2003, the US launched ambitious attacks on Iraq, claiming to destroy weapons of mass destruction in that country. After all, weapons of mass destruction were never found in Iraq, but the occupation of the country set the stage for Takfiri groups to organize and recruit their members in the name of confronting the occupiers. In reality, however, these groups took aim more at innocent people and planted their bombs in civilian residential areas without really fighting the occupiers. Among these groups, the most violent was Daesh. This group adopted its final name after the eruption of crises in Syria to include this country in the sphere of its activities. This terrorist group used the presence of the US troops on Iraqi soil as its own excuse for any inhumane crimes it committed. Just a few months after the occupation of Iraq, bombs began to go off in Shia religious centers, and religious figures became targets of assassination attempts throughout the country. It was never clear if this terrorist group really fought the occupiers or not, but it was beyond doubt that sowing divisions among Islamic sects was the group's main mission. Meanwhile, the mainstream media became the mouthpiece of Daesh and other Takfiri groups, covering all their military operations from A to Z. Their media coverage functioned as propaganda videos for the terrorist groups, depicting them as impressive and fearsome organizations. In addition, the media insisted on referring to them as the Islamic State to attribute their violence to Islam. The role of English and American media must not be overlooked in this regard, as they tried to fan the flames of sectarianism between Shia and Sunni Muslims, beating the drums of divisions and excommunication among them. Despite public protests against the destructive role these extremist so-called religious media played in society, they were given a free rein to do whatever they wanted. But the endless lenses in Syria and Iraq have yet another mission to accomplish, magnifying Daesh's power. This way, the West could get the green light from the public for the military costs of a possible war on Daesh. The media that at first called the terrorist groups opponents of the Syrian government and paved the way for the Paris meeting, which aimed to fund and arm them, now had another job to do. They had to persuade more countries to join what they called the Global Coalition to Counter ISIL, a strategy to ensure the military presence of the US and its allies in the region. The so-called coalition was also supposed to show the West as the savior of the world. In August 2015, the Huffington Post estimated that the territory under Daesh's control added up to 13,000 square kilometers, that is the size of Belgium. Though the territory is mainly made up of arid lands, it provides the terrorist group with Iraq and Syria's oil wells. It's estimated that Daesh makes $3 million a day from the illegal oil it sells to its supporting countries, without any problem or pressure. Add to that number another $2 billion in financial aids and from robbing banks, ransacking military garrisons, and people's houses. But how Daesh is selling oil and how it can access petrodollars are two questions that must be answered. Two questions the Western media prefer to skip. The fact that Daesh can act almost freely without any serious pressure from the international community can lead us to an overarching plan designed by the powers that be. It seems that the interests of the Western countries and the Israeli regime lie in a bank and oil trade with Daesh. But yet another question, why should Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who has innocent Palestinian blood on his hands, visit terrorist militants injured in Syria at hospitals in the Israeli-occupied territories and let them have the best medical services there?
العلاج والخدمة يعني خدمة لقيناها بإسرائيل أحسن من الأردن في عالم أنا كنت على الأردن وطلعت ما كان في معاملة يعني معاملتهم سيئة كانت معنا
شتيبا غير أخي سلامتك
الله يعطيكم العافية يا رب مشكورين الله يعطيكم العافية مشكورين الله يعطيكم
The important thing is the interaction these terrorist groups have with the Israeli regime on the border of Syria and the occupied territories. These images show that Takfiri terrorists open fire from the occupied territories at the Syrian soil.
ואז כמו בכל הפלישות של דאעש בעיראק ובסוריה, מגיחה שיירת טנדרים ובהם מפקדי אל-קאידה, לבושים שחורים, מכף ספורים מהגבול הישראלי. חיילי צהל משקיפים בדריכות על הנעשה, נשק מכוון כל הזמן, מוכנים למקרה שהעסקה תשתבש.
Omar, what do you think about Israel?
The Israeli regime waged the 51-day war on the innocent people of Gaza, the same time, these terrorist groups invaded parts of Iraq and Syria. During the 51-day war, more than 2,000 innocent people were killed, which enraged the entire world and prompted widespread protests against the atrocities of this regime. That's why Daesh did nothing in protest. By the same token, those so-called religious leaders who issued a so-called jihad fatwa against the Syrian government this time declared that they were against the Palestinian resistance and that Syria and Iraq were their first priority and that they wouldn't fight the Israeli regime before the fall of these two countries. Here is the Syrian soil, exactly during the Israeli invasion of Gaza. Takfiri groups trample over the Palestinian flag to show overtly their objective in Syria and Iraq. But the main dream of Daesh, as its name indicates, is to establish a so-called Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant. However, 4 years after its appearance, the group has not been able to fulfill that dream. In fact, Daesh was pushed into a corner when Sunni and Shia religious leaders in Iraq and Syria call for fighting the terrorist groups. As a result, the military power of this terrorist group shrank as many people mobilized to counter it. Every day, hundreds of Daesh militants meet their death at the hands of the militia and the army forces. So far, a number of cities have been recaptured and purged from this group. These are the signs that show Daesh's power has already begun to wane.
نیروهای مسلح کنترل اوضاع کشور رو در دست گرفتن. طی 3 روز گذشته ارتش عراق عملیات ویژه‌ای رو در مناطق مختلف شروع و به پیروزی‌های چشمگیری دست پیدا کرده. نیروهای داوطلب هم در کسب این پیروزی‌ها کمک ارتش بودند. به شما این مژده رو بدهم که 2 منطقه اسحاقی و زلویه به دست نیروهای ارتش و عشایر عراق آزاد شدند.
بر ضد تروریست های بزدل آمده ایم. آنها می خواهند حرمت اماکن مقدس را بشکنند، اما هرگز نخواهیم گذاشت.
من یقف فراء داعش الصهیونیه،
در واقع حامیان داعشی ها همون صهیونیست و استکبار جهانی هستند.
ما جوانان برای خدمت به کشور خود و مقابله با داعش جنایتکار و کینه‌توز داوطلب شده ایم.
One of the objectives of Daesh in the strategic region of the Middle East, in addition to ensuring the Israeli regime's security, is to destroy the infrastructures of the countries in the region. Just for such an objective, the so-called Global Coalition was formed to counter the self-made terrorist group, namely Daesh. But not only was the coalition not global at all, of the 40 countries that were told to join the so-called coalition, only 5 countries, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain and Jordan, worked hand in glove with the US. These countries that were involved in the creation of Daesh and its funding now were to bring to stage the second part of their scenario. The coalition was aimed at taking advantage of the situation and expanding its sphere of influence over the resistance axis countries. The so-called coalition was not to defeat Daesh, a terrorist group that has displaced thousands of Izzati Kurds in Iraq and tens of thousands of people in Kobani, Syria. The coalition was to bombard oil refineries, military garrisons and basic infrastructure in these 2 countries.
اینها قبل از این یک ائتلافی علیه سوریه تشکیل دادن با سر و صدای فراوان در اطراف عالم 30 کشور 40 کشور 50 کشور جمع کردن هیچ غلطی نتونستن بکنن در مورد سوریه در مورد عراق هم همینه نمیخوانم کار جدی بکنن. اون حرکتی که علیه داعش انجام گرفت و کمر داعش رو در عراق شکست، این کار آمریکایی ها نبود. خود اونا هم خوب میدونن، داعشی هم خوب میدونن، مردم عراق هم خوب میدونن، میدونن کار مردم عراق بود، کار ارتش عراق بود، کار نیروهای مردمی بود که به خوبی یاد گرفته بودن چجوری باید با داعش مبارزه کنن و مبارزه کردن و تا اینجا ضربه های جدی رو وارد کردن. بعد از این هم ضربه رو اینها وارد خواهند کرد. حالا خواهند دید. آمریکا با این کار میخواد بهانه ای پیدا کنه که همچنانی که در پاکستان با وجود دولت مستقر، با وجود ارتش قوی، ارتش پاکستان ارتش قوی است، بدون اجازه وارد پاکستان میشه، هر جا دلش میخواد بمباران میکنه، میخواد در عراق و سوریه هم چنین کار رو انجام بده. بدانند که اگر چنانچه چنین اقدامی بکنن، همون مشکلاتی بر سر راهشون به وجود خواهد آمد که تو این 10 سال گذشته در قضیه عراق براشون به وجود آمد.
The coalition's airstrikes didn't do any good in defeating the terrorist group. In fact, the fatal blow was delivered by the Iraqi militia and army forces. But the important thing to remember is that the creation of Daesh in the region was to counter the Islamic awakening and to turn it into a case of Islamophobia.
افراطی از سنی و شیعه افراطی هستند. این تکفیری ها از همون خوارج که افراط و تفرید می کنن نشأت گرفتن. اینا دیگه مسئله بنیادی که از قرآن و احادیث و اجماع و عقل و استحسان گرفته بشه ندارن. دلایل ما همین است، از قرآن، حدیث، اجماع، قیاس و استحسان و مجتهدین از این ها استدلال. اینا هیچ یکی را از اینا ندارن. وقتی که ندارن، افراط و تفرید خود به خود به وجود می آید.
اینها کسانی هستند که در واقع از شریعت مقدس اسلام آب شیرین رو نچشیدند، از طرق مختلف، از واسه شیاطینی ها، از دشمنان دین خودشان در مزه نشستند. بعضی ها وادار میکنند به وجود مسائل ناهنجار. ما اینها را قبول نداریم، قطعا اینها را قبول نداریم. از ما به همه توصیه میکنیم به تمام فرقه ها و گروه ها و افراد، فریب چنین افرادی را نخورند و نباید چنین کارهایی را انجام بدهند که به هر حال اسلام بدنام بشه.
انفجارات و کشتن مردم بیگناه، انتحار و کشتن مردم بیگناه، همه و همش غیر بدبین کردن غیر مسلمین به اسلام، هیچ نفعی برای اسلام نداشت، هیچ خروجی خوبی نداشت برای اسلام. پس عقیده ما اینه، باید ما هوشیارتر باشیم، حتی بعضی از مشکلات خودمان تحمل کنیم، بهتر از اینه برای رفع مشکل خودمان برای جامعه اسلامی مشکل درست کنیم. این رای من.
As the last divine religion, Islam was introduced by Prophet Muhammad, the last messenger of God, whose book, the Holy Quran, was to show the path of guidance to the world. Today, more than 1 billion Muslims are living around the world. And as people know more about Islam, more people convert to this divine religion. That's why the enemies of Islam are denying this fact and try to sow divisions among Muslims through extremist groups like Takfiris. Today, the archenemies of Muslims are those countries that support such extremist groups, those who are afraid of Muslims and their call for justice. yesterday Al-Qaeda, today Daesh, and tomorrow some other group. These are only stooges and not the main enemy and don't have much power. Otherwise, they must have conquered Iraq and Syria by now, given the considerable aids they have received so far. The main enemy is the US and the Israeli regime that are pursuing their own goals in the region by creating divisions among Muslims. Thanks to the role played by religious scholars, intellectuals, and university teachers in raising awareness, the Takfiri's days are numbered, and their agendas are no longer hidden from the general public.
امروز آن که سود میبرد از تفرقه ما اول اسرائیل در خاورمیانه دوم امریکا سوم انگلیس
لذا لازم و ضروری هست که مسلمانان اهل تشیع و اهل تسنن با هم بر حول و محور قرآن و سنت رسول الله صلی الله علیه و سلم وحدت داشته باشند و از افراطی‌گری دوری کنند
و نذاریم بیگانه ها میان ما تفرقه ایجاد کنند و این اسلام و این آرامش ما را از ما بگیرند.
یعنی من خودم یکی حاضرم به خاطر ملتم، به خاطر کشورم جانم فدا بکنم و نمیذارم هیچ اتفاقی برای کشورم امروز پیش بیاد.
پس ما امروز باید هوشیار باشیم. همه مسلمان ها اینا میخواهند که تمام کشورهای اسلامی را با هم درگیر بکنن.
لذا راهکار چیه؟ من معتقدم هم علمای اهل سنت هم علمای اهل تشیع در این مسئله کوتاهی کردن، یعنی فضا رو باز گذاشتن تا تونسته داعشی به وجود بیاد. ما باید بیاییم اسلام ناب محمدی رو به مردم معرفی بکنیم، افراط و تفریط رو به مردم معرفی بکنیم، معارف ائمه رو به مردم معرفی بکنیم.
من یه پیام دارم، میخوام به کل ملت بگم با هم دیگه برادر باشن، نذارم بقیه بیان وسطشون تفرقه بندازن، بعد از هم دیگه دور بشن، با هم دیگه متحد باشن.
اگه وحدت باشه کسی نمیتونه ما را شکست بده.
این بحران به سرعت حل خواهد شد و تنها راه برون رفت از این بحران استفاده از ظرفیت ها و توانمندی ها و آگاهی از چالش ها و تهدید ها در ساله وحدت.